What is up, folks? It is Tuesday night, and it is time for another episode of Inside the Game. I'm DJ Weed. Joining me tonight is Pain User and Idra, and unfortunately, In Control not going to be joining us because he is supporting good old Anna there at Miss USA. So hopefully you voted for her throughout the week. He apologized for not being able to be here. And guys, I did really try to find a Protoss replacement. But then I thought, you know, we've got all this backlog of Terran and Zerg-related items and some other things to talk about. It's going to work out just fine, I think.
I'm totally okay with that.
Yeah.
It's like we get one night off of Jeff In Control Robinson. Oh, yeah. So we're going to be jumping right into things. First off, guys, what's up? We've got some big events coming up here in the next few days. Idra, you're actually attending DreamHack, aren't you?
Yeah, I leave at like 6 a.m. Thursday morning, so that's going to be a lot of fun.
Oh, dude, and then don't you play Friday?
I don't know when I play, but yeah, then I'm going to be in Europe for like 2 weeks because Take's Home Story Cup thingy is right afterwards, and then me and Machine Reaction can go stay with Rhett for a while.
Oh, nice. Get some training in with those guys. Play local to the EU ladder. I know you like to do that to prep for those games. So good luck in DreamHack. I'm actually looking forward to watching the entire event. Heard some Koreans pulled out of there. I don't know if you guys have any comments.
Oh,
on
did
that.
Did they actually pull out?
Yeah, yeah.
Not in Meringing did at least.
Yeah.
Interesting. Any particular reasoning?
I heard, of course, the visa issues, which are a pain in the ass. And I know that some people are probably like, God, every single time a Korean's out, it's like a visa issue. But like, guys, visas are a pain in the ass, man. Being in gaming for a long time, I cannot tell you how many players have missed competitions because of visa issues. It does happen. It sucks. Hopefully, it'll just get a little bit better. But it has been confirmed that a few of them have pulled out. Whether or not anyone's going to replace them, we don't really know that yet. So we'll be finding that out soon enough. So, yeah. Any other exciting things this week, Idra? Anything exciting? And you were streaming earlier?
Yeah, just streaming in the downtime. Have IPL and NASL going on, but they haven't broadcast yet, so I can't really talk about it. Other than that, just preparing for DreamHack and Home Story.
Pain User, what about you, man?
Just been working real hard on the IPL stuff. Can't really talk about that either, but I mean, I have seen a lot of the assets that are going to be released, and I've been working with a lot of people on the stuff that's going on, and what I can say is that it's going to be pretty amazing, and I'm also in a position to pull a Jeff In Control Robinson and
uh-oh,
say that we have a huge announcement coming tomorrow.
Tomorrow?
Yeah, tomorrow.
All right.
You guys should stay tuned for that. There's going to be a very big IGN-related announcement coming tomorrow.
All right. Well, we got a few questions in the BNet had email about IPL, so maybe we'll go into those a little bit later. We'll go on to our first segment. And first off, thanks everyone for joining us here on Inside the Game. If you've never joined us before, welcome. We typically have three players, Pain User, Idra, and In Control, representing three different races. But, of course, In Control not here this week. So that's why we have a crazy Chinese girl eating noodles, because it only seems appropriate. Our first segment is going to be You Are Doing It Wrong. As always, you can send email to us at itg@onemoregame.tv, and I got several of your emails about helping with email. I will be answering those soon, so thank you everyone who reached out regarding that. And one of the things I did this week is obviously I kind of picked and choose things for the Zerg and Terran. Like we had a huge backlog of these questions, so I thought it'd work out pretty good. However, this one's kind of all encompassing, the first one that we're going to be talking about, and it's reaching a skill cap. And it would be my guess that there's actually a lot of people out there that are feeling this exact same way. And, you know, one thing that I do believe is that over the course of StarCraft II, I think that we'll see sort of new players come out of nowhere, because I think that people are dedicating that much time and that much effort to the game. It won't be an easy climb, but I do think that it's going to happen. And anyway, here's what Christian writes. When I bought the game, I was bronze, and I've trained myself up to Masters League, and I think I haven't reached my skill cap yet, which is going to be the key point in this question. But I feel like no matter how much I train, I will never be as good as an Idra, an In Control, or a Pain User, even if I practice more and harder than them. And he asks kind of his own question. Then, of course, I'm going to fire a few at you guys as well. He says, are some people just better than other people at playing video games in general? Or do you think that people will, like, hit a natural skill cap? And, you know, I don't know who wants to take this one first. But as someone who not only kind of took up, you know, RTS in a more serious matter when StarCraft II came out, and having more of a offhand experience in some of other RTS games, I mean, I could certainly understand that we have these moments where we're just like, God, I feel like this is as good as I'll ever be in the game. So I feel like that's kind of what he's asking a little bit, is that, you know, what do you think is the potential for the skill gap or cap of some of these players that are kind of just making their way into the game? Who wants to fire off first?
I think there's certainly a skill cap. I think that's undeniable. You just have to look at Korea. Everyone practiced, especially in StarCraft 1, everyone practiced 10, 12 hours a day. Pretty much all the teams were on similar schedules. And then you have someone like Flash, who just utterly annihilates everyone else anyway. There has to be something innate to that, otherwise it's just inexplicable. In StarCraft 1, I didn't think talent was really that big of a deal. But I've actually kind of been changing my opinion on that since StarCraft 2, since I'm closer to the actual top of the game. And you can see the different levels more clearly. There are people who work really, really hard, and they're just not all that good. And I don't really know how else to explain that. There are some other factors that go into it. They may be practicing inefficiently. And I think everyone is certainly capable of being Grandmaster if they apply themselves, given the current environment. And probably even playing at a competitive level amongst foreigners. But it will take some people different amounts of time. Some people are just smarter or better attuned to strategical thinking as it applies to StarCraft. And then there is the physical aspect of it, hand-eye coordination. Everyone just has different abilities with respect to that. So, yeah, there's definitely a talent component to it. And if you want to compete at the very, very highest levels, then that will matter. But generally speaking, I think you can overcome most things with hard work.
Pain User, what are your thoughts on this? As you've kind of competed in several different games, including a genre of that includes FPS, RTS, etc.
I mean, yeah, definitely. If you look at it from the perspective of that, I mean, there's just good gamers in general. And, you know, I would transition from pretty much every game I played, put in a lot of hard work and time, you know, at the beginning when I initially started playing it, and then eventually you get good. And I think a lot of those skills from a lot of different games translate to StarCraft 2 especially. StarCraft 2 is not your everyday RTS. There's a lot of changes that they made to the way units function, like the smart AI, things like that. So I think like quick thinking and just being an intelligent gamer in general are super important skills. So in response to what that guy said about some people just being better gamers in general, there's no doubt about that. Like, I know people that throughout my gaming career that have just been absolutely amazing at every game they pick up. They're just so good, whether it's just one genre or another. And then there's also people who are just very good at a specific genre. You know, people who can play FPSs and they're super talented, but you put them on an RTS and it's like a completely different world. So I feel like if you're just a good gamer in general, if you already have the pre-existing skill sets in RTSs, in FPSs, you know, even if you've played RPGs at a high level, like World of Warcraft, I think all of those skills culminate and translate into StarCraft too. So,
well, let me throw out something a chatter here said, and I would try to pronounce his name, but it's just got a bunch of F-E-F-W-E-F's, W's, and Q's in it, so I'm not even going to try. And he says, if we're talking RTS, it's definitely coming down to who is smarter, as in highest IQ. And I like what he says here. If you don't study your schoolwork and you don't get straight A's, you're fucked. And, you know, it kind of seems like a similar thing in that if you equate it to, you don't agree?
No, I don't agree at all. I know players in every game at the highest level that are dumb as a doorstep. They just practice really, really hard, and they have like an innate ability to absorb what they see.
What about from a study perspective, like a study perspective?
Well, that's going to help you regardless. I mean, if you study StarCraft 2, you're going to get better. I mean, that's just that goes without saying. But I don't think that someone at the top who studies really, really hard and
gets all the details on all of his opponents, detailed statistics about their wins and losses and which maps they suffer on and things like that. Like, sure, it's going to increase your chances a little bit, but there's no way you can make a generalized statement like, oh, somebody who studies super hard and has a high IQ is going to beat everyone at the top level. I mean, it helps.
I don't know that the chatter was going like that far, but I think he was making a generalization that, like, let's pull an example out, okay? Take two guys in Diamond, right? They're working their way up to Masters, and you get one guy that comes home every day, maybe plays a couple hours. He doesn't really watch much StarCraft. He doesn't really read the threads. He is a pretty good gamer, and, you know, he's trying to get better and just by playing casually. And then you got other Diamond Jimmy who comes home, who, like, you know, maybe gets a couple lessons from a few of the top gamers. Maybe he's watching his replays diligently. He's watching a lot of high-level StarCraft. I mean, is Diamond Jimmy going to do better than Diamond Bob, who just kind of, like, comes home and plays a few games? Or is it possible that Bob could excel quicker than Diamond Jimmy?
It depends. Everyone learns differently, and everyone has different innate strengths and weaknesses. And if they're investing the same amount of time, they could end up the same level. The guy who just practices kind of aimlessly, he may have a good strategical feel for the game. He may just get it. And that practice gives him the mechanics necessary to then pull him through at the same level as Diamond Jimmy, who is he has good hand-eye coordination. He can make things happen on the screen, but he's dumb as a brick. So then he sees all these replays, he just copies them action for action. And then they both end up at the same level, just in different ways. So it's more about figuring out what you need personally, what you need to work on, and everything like that. And really just attuning your practice to your own strengths and weaknesses.
Is Diamond Bob, then, who just casually practices, is he ever going to be able to compete at that level that you say that players could ultimately reach?
No, I doubt it. I mean, okay. We're not putting any numbers to the amount he practices, but just playing casually, you're never going to reach the highest level, and you probably won't even reach high level, like, competitive foreigners.
Okay. No, it's interesting perspectives all around. Final thoughts on reaching a skill cap. I mean, you know, if you kind of feel like you've hit a brick wall, and we talked about this a little bit on Inside the Game, you know, there's some things that you can do, but I don't know. Any, like, do you just keep on doing what you're doing, or do you, you know, practice a different way or look at your game differently? I don't know. We've talked about it a few times, and I don't think anyone was able to reach a full conclusion on that, but
I definitely think that if you've hit a plateau and you're already at a really high level, you just need to, like, critically examine what's going on with your practice. You need to look at other areas of your game that you could possibly be working on. You need to talk to other pro players, friends of yours who play, start examining each other and just, like, work out all the different strengths and weaknesses. Like Greg was saying, there's so many different aspects to making one particular player better than another or one particular player good. That's why the game is so dynamic. There's like a million different fields, and everybody has different levels in all those different fields. So try and find out what your weakest fields are, and then just really, really work on that, because that's obviously what people are gonna be exploiting, and that's probably one of the reasons why you're losing or struggling to get better.
Well, skill caps suck, but, you know, I think if Idris says that anyone has the potential to be at that spot, hopefully Christian will get some motivation from that. So, okay, fair enough. Thanks, Christian, for your call in here. Let's move on to the next one, and this is going to be a little bit more Idra-centric. And I don't know that I've ever really heard, you know, Idra, your thoughts on this, so I'm kind of excited. I did not record the name of the individual that asked this, but throwing it down, it's the macro hatch. And basically, it boils down to, when is an appropriate time to throw down a macro hatch? Sometimes the players may choose to build this too quick or too late, and it never becomes effective. What are the benefits and advantages of getting a macro hatch instead of another base? You know, let's talk about this a little bit. We see this in some games. Other times, we don't see it. In fact, I think the author was talking about how he doesn't see it as much out of you, Idra. So, talk to us about the macro hatch from a Zerg perspective.
I've actually been starting to use them more and more, both versus Terran and versus Protoss. The advantage or the time you will use them is obviously when either you can't defend another base or you don't want to spread yourself that thin. Like oftentimes in CVT, before your lair tech kicks in, you'll start getting a boom of minerals if you've been able to pump pure drones early on like you want to. But you won't have that tech to allow you to secure another base for its bio. You won't have speed banes or mutas or anything like that. So in that case, I think it's often a good time to put down a third hatchery. You can afford it. You have more than enough minerals. You need to build that hatchery, but you can't build another base. And versus Protoss, I've been starting to do what Lucira did in some of his bigger macro games, where after double expanding, he would then put down a fourth hatchery really quickly just to get that additional production without extending himself to a fourth base, which would be pretty hard to defend. And I'm liking that as well. Generally speaking, if you feel that you can defend another base, then take it. Because even if you're not going to... An important thing there, though, is that you don't have to drone a hatchery just because it's at an expansion, because that is the dangerous part. Making the hatchery is only a 300 mineral investment, but if you then feel you have to have drones there to take advantage of it, that's a much bigger investment, and it leaves you very vulnerable. So oftentimes it'll be good to make that hatchery at an expansion and then just not build any drones for it until you're prepared. But yeah, if you feel that you can defend another expansion, you should put the hatchery there, even if you're not going to make drones right away. If you don't feel you can, but you do have that boom of minerals, or you do need that added production, then you should have a macro hatchery.
Because of the build time of the hatchery, it could seem like, okay, I'm going to put this down, and I'm going to, you know, eventually be able to get a lot more units out of it, etc. But is there ever like, I mean, should you always kind of be using the same timing as if now is when I would be putting down that third base, but I just don't want to defend it? Or are you ever looking at your minerals and going, okay, well, now I'm to the point where I need that larva to produce what's incoming?
You don't actually want to be at that point. You want to know in X minutes I'm going to be at that point, so I should build that hatchery now so I can use those resources when I have them. It's really important to practice a lot and see where your mineral booms happen and then build a hatchery 2 or 3 minutes earlier. Like I said in ZBT, your minerals will start to spike around the time you saturate two bases, but you can keep them down with constant larva injects and constant production. But then another minute or two later, after it's been running and you're starting to save up for mutas and stuff, then your minerals will really spike. That's when you need the third hatchery. So you need to make it when your minerals are just starting to go up. And, you don't want to see your minerals shoot up to 1,000 or whatever and then put down a hatchery in response to that. You want to practice enough that you know when your minerals will do that and then make it preemptively.
And in most I know it's like sort of map situational, but in most cases, are you putting your macro hatch at your natural?
And situations like Zelnaga, where there's a really wide open natural, then I'll use it to help just kind of narrow the choke. But generally speaking, I just put in the main or the natural, because often what I do is no one has perfect injects, myself included. I always build up mana. So I just put it there between the main and the natural, and then use it to sap off extra mana from my main and natural queens. I just make sure I keep it near those two hatcheries.
It's a nice perspective. I haven't heard on it, for sure. You talked a little bit about the benefits and advantages. Are there any times where you just, are saying a macro hatch is just, like, wrong to do? Like, you shouldn't even be doing it? One base?
Yeah, putting down like a second hatchery when you're off one base, I'm trying to think of situations where I've seen people put down macro hatcheries, and usually it's at least arguably decent. I'm not sure what situations people usually use them in, so it's kind of hard to say. I don't really know.
Okay. I was curious nonetheless, so. And you say you've been liking it, that you've been incorporating it in your game a little bit more?
Yeah, especially as EVP, because I've been playing more Roachling-centric, more mass units early on. Like I said, copying a lot from Lucira from his macro-heavy ZVPs. I like it a lot there. And the early game ZVT timing, that one specific thing is just you have too many resources, you have to spend them on something.
Right on.
Interesting. A lot of players have been using macro orbitals lately, too.
Yeah, you're right. And, I mean, since you brought it up, Pain User, from a Terran perspective, talk to us about that.
I mean, I think it's great, just depending on your situation in the game. If you can sneak it into your build, it's going to pay for itself in a few mules. You just need to obviously survive beyond that point. So if you can comfortably work it into your build orders, I think it's a really good idea. And not to mention, you can just use it as a macro orbital for a little while, and then eventually when it's safe and when the time is right and when you have the positioning right, you can take your third. So you're going to eventually do that anyway, and that's the beauty of the orbital. It doesn't necessarily have to be at a mineral spot to bolster your economy, and you can just make a few SCVs here and there out of it. So I think it's really, really good as Terran too. I've even seen a couple weirdos drop macro nexuses, but that's only something you see on the NA server with noobs at Grandmaster's level. But I've definitely seen it before. I don't think it has any benefit at all, really, as Protoss, unless, I mean, you're trying to, like, chrono boost upgrades really fast or
and,
something like
that. You know, another thing that seems to definitely, as far as the macro orbitals are concerned, is that, and we saw Major do this, in fact, just I think it was two nights ago, actually it was last night, where he ended up putting down so many orbitals that he was getting a larger army because he was killing off his SCVs and using just mules at that point.
Yeah, that's a really, really strong tactic that's kind of been around but hasn't gotten popular for a long time.
Yeah.
And I expect it'll get more popular in the future. It's really, really powerful.
Well, when that supply means, you know, means everything as far as your army is concerned.
Especially
I
totally
agree.
Super late game when you're both maxing. Any kind of supply you can free up for a larger army is awesome. I mean, it just helps out a lot in those huge fights. You know, if you have 10 to 20 extra supply, that can make a really big difference.
Yeah. No, I agree. And I like to see sort of that, the evolution of those mechanics. I think both the macro hatch, macro orbital, are definitely, you know, are definitely big. And who knows, you had mentioned the macro Nexus, and even though we haven't seen a whole lot for Protoss that are going to start developing strategies, this is just like crazy chrono boost. We might be seeing more. I just don't know if Protoss has found any reason to go that way. So hopefully that answers the questions that our readers had, or our watchers, viewers had about the macro hatch. I like hearing what you said, Idra, about, you know, sometimes consider dropping it at your third, even if you're not going to make drones. I think that's probably something as a Zerg player I haven't really considered, but could help out, because then when you're like, oh, wow, okay, I won that battle, I should have a third now, kind of already set. It makes a lot of sense. Obviously, I've hit my skill cap, and you just raised it a little bit. All right, guys, our last item for You're Doing It Wrong, and yes, you can go ahead and email us at itg@onemoregame.tv. I saw someone asking about it earlier. And this is going to be a little bit different one. And I bet you probably haven't had this discussion before, but I'm calling this improving event management. And I read a lot of threads post-MLG where there were some specific instances brought up about players not knowing when they were going to play, being delayed, etc., etc. And so what I want to do is I want to present to you guys an idea, right? So, okay, you are the board and you are players who have been in this situation before, who have had to deal with things like,
Indra went into the conversation, B, please,
and they expect you to hear it over, you know, over roaring fans, etc. So I'm going to pitch to you guys how I think we can improve this, right? And I'm sure you've all been to a restaurant where you've had to wait for your table, and they give you this little plastic thing that when your table's ready, it's like, oh, my table's ready. Look at that. It's flashing. And I go and I'm like, what's up? I'm Graham, party of five. And
sometimes they vibrate too.
And sometimes they vibrate, right? So
that'd be super helpful.
I started doing some research on these systems because I'm like, dude, they can't be that expensive if, like, local mom-and-pop restaurants have had these. I know this is a good idea, man. This is what I produce, good fucking ideas. And so I did some research, and I'm like, this is not that expensive. So then I was like, but, dude, no gamers want to carry around something like this.
Who cares, dude?
But then I started finding things that were, like, the size of this, that were, like, actually, you know, something you could wear around your neck or put in your pocket that also lit up, made a noise, and flashed. And I'm thinking, if every person that came to the event was basically assigned one of these things, and when it was time to play, ref goes over, he punches in your number, you're out eating, you know, because you don't know when you're going to be playing next, and all of a sudden, bleep, 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 bleep. Oh, shit, I got a match to play. I'm going to go head over to the tournament area. And boom, they don't have to be...
When it panels are over to Station B, please. Panel, you have a match in 2 minutes.
Yeah, and then you get all the little, like, MLG minions, like, trying to track you down and run you down at the tournament. All your friends are, like, texting you and running up to you, like, you're about to get disqualified. Like, where are you?
I know.
I stepped out for 5 minutes, and it always happens right when you step out.
Right.
To get food or to get some water or something like that.
When you're sitting there, and they're like, dude, we buzzed you 5 minutes ago, and you're holding your key, and it's like... Then, you know, at that point, you don't really have an excuse. Now, we can bring up the semantics of, well, what about the range of these things and blah. And I did the research, and actually some of them have a ridiculous, ridiculous range. But at least it allows the players to not have to confine themselves to just that area, especially if they're waiting. Go out, maybe get something to eat, whatever, and still be have the ability to be summoned, if you will, by the tournament organizers. So now I kind of turn it over to you guys. We'll start with you, Idra. So you go to MLG, you sign in, they hand you one of these things, and you're like, okay, sweet. You go and you eat, boom, it buzzes off. You're like, awesome, I got a match to go play. You go play it, boom, like, is this a crazy, crazy idea? Or?
Nah, dude.
I don't know.
I don't know what you want to say.
I want you to give me from a player perspective, because I'm thinking from an event management perspective, and I'm like, oh, man, this would be the greatest idea ever, because I just see, I don't like the guy screaming over the mic.
It's time for the Marvel vs. Capcom 3 match. We need to have a big slim Billy.
It doesn't seem to be effective. So let's start with Idra, because it sounds like you might have conflicting ideas on this.
Yeah. Well, the bigger problem is just having time to eat at these things, and you go off to get food, and then you order it, it gets there, or you get the food or whatever, and then your little thing buzzes. You still don't have time to eat. You just wasted all that food. You got to go play. I think a much better solution is to just have scheduled meal breaks at no matter what. They don't start another match within 20 minutes of it, and that's just a break in the day. Everyone goes, gets food, then you come back, and then you resume. And that takes care of the fact that delays keep messing with the schedule and all that. You just have this hour for lunch, this hour for dinner that's absolutely untouchable, and then everyone can get food. Because that is the biggest problem with all the scheduling issues, is that people are actually not eating the entire day.
All right. I'm going to rephrase this question for Idra here real quick. Because I agree with you. Like, it should absolutely be, because, you know, like, even that would give them the casters time off, you know? So let's say... that next event, we got mandatory dinner times, all is good, and you're still handed this key, and you're still notified when your matches are playing.
Yeah, then that'd be absolutely fine. Like, I haven't had much of a problem with, like, not hearing them, because I stay in the event, because I'm worried about getting disqualified. But yeah, that would certainly make things easier.
Okay. Okay. All right. Yeah, Idris hard to please. He's the tough one on the board to please. He's just like... You know, good experience. That's all I need. Pain user, let's...
I think it would be great. I think set meal times for people to, you know, step out and get some food. More, like, on-site food would be awesome. Like, a Subway...
That isn't awful. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that isn't awful. Like, a Subway stand or, like, maybe just catered food for all the players. I don't know what the costs are associated with that, but, I mean, if you got it from someplace that's not super expensive, it would probably be doable.
Apparently, my idea is shit because you guys just want to talk about food and breaks, which is cool. I think we need food and breaks.
No, dude. Do the buzzer thing, but I don't think, you know, well, actually, for people who step outside, that's actually probably really helpful, depending on the range.
Well, I just figured as a player, like, I'll give you an example. I hate to be locked down around the production desk. I would love to have some ability to be like, bleep, bleep. Oh, they're calling me back. It must be time to cast. Because I want to be able to go out, you know, hit up the Starbucks, go talk to people, go watch the players play, etc. You know, maybe I'm just pipe dreaming over here. But I've seen just, like, too many tournaments just kind of have, like, this very traditional way of running tournaments. And I feel like you could make things a lot more efficient by introducing technology. But I agree with you guys both. We need breaks. We need those dinner breaks. They're very important. All right, I'll just keep my key idea for another board. Thanks, guys, for shooting me down. All right, no, let's move on to if Battle.net had email, And I know that I'm always wondering what would happen if Battle.net had email. Send your questions to itg@onemoregame.tv. And Pain User, we're going to start actually with you because we got several emails about the NASL situation. Give you an opportunity to, you know, I know that you've kind of addressed the subject, but another good medium for you to talk to fans. And then a lot of questions about IPL. And, you know, obviously we've been watching inside the game, hearing more and more about your involvement. You've already been casting some games, got the upcoming season as well. So let's talk about that. Which one do you want to tackle first?
I guess the first one.
All right, NASL, drop it on us, brother.
All right, so my whole situation with the NASL deal was, you know, I was playing my matches, I was participating in the league to the best of my ability, and then I had to do a video shoot for MLG. And, you know, MLG, obviously a competitor in a way of sorts, and they weren't willing to budge on the whole scheduling thing. And I was out in New York, and I was supposed to, you know, just, like, grab the nearest laptop or whatever and just play my games. Didn't have any of my gear, nothing like that, and I had a flight in 2 hours. So that's the first forfeit that I got right there. Not much to say about it, just a conflict of scheduling, and didn't work out. And then as soon as I got back, started my work with IGN. Was obviously busy during the work days, 9 to 5, so my match time was scheduled for every day at Friday, and depending on which match you are for the day, it determines the match time, but they were all during work hours. So I tried to get that changed somehow, and I did actually reschedule one of my matches earlier on in NASL because I had some family stuff to, like, it was like 5 p.m. or something like that, and it worked out perfectly. But I couldn't do anything like that, so I was forced to play the matches that I did play from work on a different computer. And, you know, Greg can vouch, it's never fun playing on a foreign setup without your stuff.
Yeah, it's
not fun. So I did that for a while. And then, you know, I'm at the end of the day, I'm still at work. I'm in a work environment. Obviously, on Inside the Game, I'm connecting with the community. I'm talking to fans. I'm still putting myself out there. We're talking about the IPL and stuff, so that's okay. But as far as just straight up playing, you know, StarCraft matches at work, you know, my boss was not cool with that. She was cool with the idea at first, but eventually, you know, when I was like, you know, can I play every match here every week? It's like, no, absolutely not. You know, you're at work. So there was definitely a scheduling conflict there. And I know Zerus talked to his boss about it and tried to see what could be done. And apparently nothing could be done.
I have a question. Because there's been a lot of, I mean, there's been like mixed comments in regards to this, right? I've pretty much seen them, you know, back and forth. But I just want to ask a question. Do you feel like if you would have had a better performance in NASL that maybe people wouldn't be hoo-haing as much about it as they are?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, it's really easy to, you know, pick on the guy who ended up going 0-for in the season and just be like, oh, you know, like, he didn't care. He totally blew an opportunity. And it's like, look, I started a full-time job. I wasn't practicing. My division had some of the best players in the world. Greg was in my division. He knows. There were really, really good players in our division. And with the amount of time that I was putting into practice, there's no way that I could take it seriously short of quitting my job. I'd get back from my work every day at, like, 8:30 and just be super tired. Go to bed at like 9:30, 10, and I wasn't really trying to grind out games to practice in the few spare hours I had every day. So my priorities changed, and I was obviously still willing to participate in the league, and I couldn't give up my position to a player who was more deserving. I had tons of friends that I could have given my spot to, but that also wasn't an option. So then had to go against my boss's wishes and play the final match from work. Yeah, albeit I was 15 minutes late. I totally admit to that. I was in a meeting. I hopped out. I had the missed call and text from Zerus, hopped in, played the match. And I said that I would finish out the season. So I did that, which, you know, is putting my whole job situation at risk. And then also all of the drama on TL, the posts from Zerus, and also In Control, like, you know, people at my work play StarCraft. They follow the community. Like, it's bad to put out that kind of PR either way. Bad PR is bad PR, whether it's for me, whether it's for them. You don't want to hurt the image of your league by personally attacking players in your league. It's just, and then I put out the apology just because it was necessary. I had to do it. I felt like I let people down in terms of my performance in NASL, and then also just not being able to attend my matches. Like, that's not how I wanted things to play out, but that's what the apology was for, and I thought it would end after that. I didn't
I was trying to accept personal responsibility. I was trying to accept blame. And somehow it backfired and started this whole shitstorm.
I know we're boring Idra over here, so no. But I mean, as a guy who's like, as much as I wish that esports could be my number one focus, it's actually my family, and so that makes esports my number three focus, because my number two focus has to be my full time job. And for those of you who haven't gotten to experience the wonderful world of corporate America. it sucks, but at the same time, it takes care of number one, you know? Exactly. And so, you know, like, I have a hard time even accepting any of the negative comments. I think I said about it what I said is that, you know, probably the biggest thing would be that communication needed to improve. But on the actually taking the job perspective, which it seems like you've gotten heat for, which kind of blows my fucking mind. That's just totally not cool because, you know, like you said, got to pay the bills, man.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, there's not really much to say about it. Like, it was an unfortunate situation for both parties. I don't know why they made that that video on Reddit. Like, I didn't even take the time to watch it, but I heard from people it was a nice little personal attack. But whatever. It's water under the bridge. I don't want to burn any bridges with NASL. I don't have any problems with any of those guys. Zerus and Andre are both friends of mine, so I mean, that's that. Hopefully it's squashed after this.
All right, well, let's do this. Before we talk about IPL, I think there's only one more appropriate question to ask, and that is the fact that if my memory serves me correct, Idra, you were affected by pain users' leave of the NASL. Is that correct?
I'm not entirely sure. I don't know. Ended up being no, since I lost to Boxer. If I had beat Boxer, then it would have been relevant. Because if he had beaten Zenyo, it would have helped me take top two. But it ended up being irrelevant since I lost to Boxer.
I mean, these things happen, but did that have any sort of relevance to the tournament for you personally?
No, if I had won all my matches, I would have gone through no matter what. Like, you should never really depend on another person.
Fair enough. I felt like I had to ask the question because I saw...
And not only that, like, there was no way I was going to beat Zenyo. Like, he destroyed me.
It's okay, buddy. Don't.
You're like, it's okay. Thanks.
You hit your skill cap, pain user. God.
I was pretty far from it, actually. I don't think anybody is... I don't think anybody is even close to that yet.
Let's talk a little bit about IPL then, as you are kind of in the home where IPL, a lot of IPL stuff happens, right? People were asking, because you were talking about the job. One guy's like, is he the janitor over there at IGN? But that's not the case. So tell us what you do and then tell us about the IPL.
I'm working on a lot of their different assets, like web shows, stuff like that, content that we're going to be producing. And then obviously I'm casting for the IPL, along with Kevin Cat's Pajamas and HD StarCraft. So we are the in-house casters for IGN, and I'm actually going to be double-timing it as an analyst. So I'm going to be doing a lot of casting over the next couple of weeks. And, yeah, just a lot of big stuff in the future coming. Obviously, I can't mention things I would love to mention, other than the fact that there is a huge announcement coming tomorrow. I was given the okay on the ability to drop that so I can pull it in control and say that there's going to be an announcement about an announcement sometime tomorrow. So you guys should stay tuned for that. And then also, Marcus, you're coming back on board for IPL2 as a caster.
Yes, I am. I think we'll have some special appearances by Mini Wheat as well. I am the only caster who is currently docked. Kids running around naked right now. God, man. How do I even control all this craziness and chaos going? Anyway, I'm looking forward to it. I really enjoyed what IPL1 produced. And the cool thing, let me tell you, because, you know, normally a lot of the stuff I do is live, right? And so it's pretty rare when I get to create the content and then it is produced to be aired later, because I think I watched every single IPL match, including even the ones that you know, I casted. Because for me, I was like, well, here's a good opportunity for me to, like, point out to myself how I could improve in this sort of situation, etc.
Ask yourself why Greg's leaving games and you shouldn't be leaving.
And I totally got into it. So I was absolutely stoked to be returning and alongside some other big names as well. So that's totally awesome. I'm
indeed
happy to be a part of it again.
I think it's totally awesome. And are you going to be solo casting?
Well, I'm set up to, but you know, I mean, dude, if you want to make it happen, then let's do it, dude.
Dude, I'm always down to cast with you. That's always the good times, laid back, hilarious cast.
Let's do it. I mean, seriously. And we are casting EG Masters Cup tonight after Inside the Game. So, you're playing in it, Idra. You kind of have, I guess IPL's a little close to your heart, right? Because you won that shit back in season one. So,
yeah, I'm playing in the other one right now, so I'm a fan of IPL for the moment.
And for the moment, I think, did Idra just say that he's been winning his matches without saying, I don't know.
Broadcast, we don't know.
They certainly have done things a little bit differently from a player's perspective. I mean, because it was very, very well received by the audience who watched the VODs, who watched the live streaming of it. The production was phenomenal. And you know, how do you sort of view it as a player? Is it just another competition for you to compete in? Or, you know, what are your take on how they're approaching StarCraft II?
It's actually kind of bizarre for me because they're running it like a generic online tournament. It's being run really, really well. Everything's set up on time. Everyone shows up. It's being really well run. But it is, you just show up online on Battle.net, you play your match, then you email them the replays. And that feels like just another one of these generic $1,000 tournaments or whatever. But then you sit back and you realize it's $50,000 prize pool, something like 15 for first. So it's really, really huge. And then from a spectator's perspective, I watched a lot of the games last season. I was really, really impressed. They have great production value. Not a fan of all their casters, but they have people like Pain User and HD who are a lot of fun to listen to. And the production value is absolutely great. It looked like watching GSL while inside Korea. So I was really impressed with that perspective.
Nice save, by the way. I really like the league.
I had forgotten that you were doing it.
It's okay. No, I get it.
No, that was good.
I was just
implying the Total Biscuit sucked. Everyone else is cool.
Oh, okay.
Booyah!
So, I'm really big fan of it in general. It's a great tournament.
Yeah, he said that he thought you weren't that great of a caster either. And I started writing a reply, and then I was just like, you know, whatever. I get to cast with Craig, so I'll just be selfish about it.
They fill two, like, completely different roles. And I know,
and it's actually
Craig's
a whole
like,
other
super
debate.
Good at his, so I don't know how you could... I don't know how you could call him out for being a crappy analyst. He's got great analyzation of games.
It's a whole nother thing we won't get too much into. So anyway, yes, check it out. IPL2 is going to be starting up. I believe it starts 1 week from today, officially. Like, it begins airing 1 week from today. Correction? Is that right?
Yeah.
Pain User, you work there?
I think it might be a little farther down the line than that.
Oh, okay. All right. I thought it was July 14th.
Yeah, I think that is it.
Okay. All right. Starting in July, I believe.
Yes.
All right, guys. We got a few questions, and then we'll open up the phone lines here. We got about 40 minutes left in the show. So, Battle.net emails. Which one do we want to do here? Let's do. Yeah, I don't. That one. No one really cares about that one. I don't know. Okay, let's do this one. Mech Play TVZ. Question is for Idra. Pinos, I think you'll have some comments anyway. I'm a plat Zerg, and I often have trouble against mech play in ZVT. What should my approach be to a Terran that goes heavy mech in terms of strategy, game plan, and transitions?
Hey, if they open straight mech, which is really, really rare now, you should go Roach into Infestor and get to Broodlords pretty quickly, unless you want to get dropped and stuff and play very counterattack, very kind of aggressive. And take the game to them. If they open up bio and then switch into a more mech-heavy army, which is a lot more popular right now, generally you'll open up Mutil and Baneling just because it looks standard. Then you'll realize they're going mech-heavy. And from there, I switch into really Neuroparasite-heavy Infestor play, and again headed towards Broodlords. And your end goal is always going to be Broodlord, Corruptor, Infestor.
And that's pretty much... how it is. What about, as you said, like not starting mech, but making a transition to mech? As we've seen, like, you know, maybe they're going with that quick early bio pressure, and then suddenly they got two factories down, and all hell is breaking loose from the Terran base. Same thing?
No, that was the second scenario I mentioned. If you open up Mutaling Baling, but then you see three or more factories, then you'll switch into more Infestor-heavy play.
Okay, gotcha.
And with, especially with Neural Parasite, because Fungal is just not particularly good versus slow tank pushes. But yeah, Neural Parasite's very good versus...
Okay, and playing pure mech style, pain user, anything that you would give a suggestion to the Terrans out there to try to crush those Zerg, even though that never happens?
I think that opening mech is terrible. I mean, you can make it work, but just opening pure mech is, you concede a lot of map control, and the Zerg knows that you're not going to be able to pressure for quite a while. You can do a little bit of harassment with Hellions, I guess, if you're going with the mech style. But, you know, at the end of the day, if they shut that down and you don't do any serious damage, the Zerg can take a quick third, quick fourth, and just go straight to Broodlords, like Greg was saying. And once they get to that stage of the game, it's really tough to deal with mech. So yeah, I think transitioning into mech later and going into a mech heavy style later on, just because all the mech units are so efficient and powerful, they're really good against Zerg. Neural Parasite's tough to deal with. You might want to keep your tanks like super spread out, and you need to get a really good field of spread on your tanks, because otherwise Neural Parasite will just absolutely rip you apart. Or they can, you know, grab some of your Thors and start killing tanks with Neural Parasite. So as far as dealing with mech, I think Broodlords are without a doubt the way to go. They're great against everything. And then also, even if you just force him to start producing Vikings, he's already investing so much gas in going mech that just starting to produce Vikings two at a time or even four at a time is a really big investment on his part as well. So you're forcing all kinds of good things, and you're going to be able to stop him from pushing if you have Broodlords. So you'll be relatively safe.
All right. We got a Terran question that came in, and I do believe this is probably from a lower leaguer, but there are plenty of those that watch this show, despite what some people think. So he says that he has a question about drop play. He says, first, let me say I'm a platinum Terran player. I have noticed that people are a lot better at denying drop ships than I am not doing enough damage like I used to in the lower leagues. Something I know that as people move up, they see a lot. So here is his question, split into two. How can I make my dropship play be more effective and successful? And what should he be focusing on as attack, workers or production? And then there's an additional follow-up question to that.
So what's his question exactly?
His question is, how can he make his dropship play more effective and successful? And I think in saying that, my guess is here's a player who's attempted drops and... like
I see what I,
you know, had it. A moment to like do some damage and starts hitting workers, and then he's like, no, I'm going to take out this building, and then he's like, no, I should go back to the workers. And so I think he's looking for some sort of guidance, like what could be the be-all standard rule for when you drop, are you just like stim and go for the Nexus or what?
I'll break it down for him. There are two really, really, really important things. One is you almost always need to distract somehow before your drop. Whether you're attacking the front or pressuring the front, you don't always necessarily want to attack the front because you can lose your entire army, obviously, especially if you have army diverted to the drop. But you need to at least feign pressure to the front of his base and then maybe stim a Marauder and a Marine in and have them attack his force at the front. When you know his attention is on his units at the front of his base, then send in your medevac that's already pre-positioned somewhere outside his base into the mineral line or to go pick off a key structure or whatever. So rule number one is you have to distract him somehow. Don't just go for a drop blindly because it's really easy to counter. He could have units already predisposed to deal with your drop. So you can't do that. And then rule two is don't get greedy with your drops. Be happy with, you know, killing a few probes or killing a forge that's upgrading or killing a robotics bay that's upgrading range, whatever. A robo bay. Just take what you can get and get out and keep your units alive and then mix them back into your army. And then I guess a third way to get really effective drops is to drop multiple places at the same time. And you can even do that with the distract rule. So if you distract him and then you drop multiple places at the same time, you can just straight up win games like that. If you tax someone's multitasking to
you know, beyond what they're capable of dealing with, or if you just get really lucky in a situation where his units happen to be out of position and you're dropping two different places simultaneously, you can just straight up win. And I think that the same thing applies to Zerg against Protoss, or most of it, I would imagine.
Yeah.
It's a little bit different, though. I guess you have Burrow, and, you know, you can distract him even longer after the drop takes place.
Yeah, the only real difference there is instead of picking up your units and running away, or maybe keeping the dropship there to continue the harass, a lot of times you can just burrow, and that serves the same purpose and forces them to keep an observer with multiple portions of their army as they try and clean up everything. But yeah, those are all just general principles for good dropping. Distraction is the biggest key.
All right, well, there was a bronze follow-up to that because we got another email, and this guy was asking, how do you pick up units quickly when doing a drop? For example, when I have two medevacs and five marines left and I'm surrounded by a bunch of links, how do I make sure that the marines go inside the closest medevac to them as quickly as possible? I just drag my units and fucking click on a medevac or on an OV. And, I mean, I assume that's how everyone does it, unless there's something I don't know about.
What? I'm getting trolled.
Yeah, you are.
It's actually pretty cool, though.
Right. I mean, it's. What do you? Did you hear this, pain user? No.
Yeah, dude. People are flying helicopters into my face at work. I didn't catch that last one.
So, oh, you didn't catch it. Okay.
No.
All right. Basically, this guy doesn't know how he should be picking up his units properly. Right. I'm not sure if this guy is actually selecting his medevac and then individually clicking on Marines, but as far as I know, everyone just highlights the units that they want to throw into their transport units, and that's it. Done deal.
And
right?
Also,
so
if it's difficult to select, if you have your dropship hovering over your units and it's like blocking the top of the Marines and the Marauders, just select everything and then just right-click the dropship. Like, it doesn't even matter.
Right, right. Now, I think what he might also be saying is that, well, when I've got Lings surrounding me, then you've got to bring the dropship over, and then you can still highlight all, click dropship, and leave.
Yeah.
Word. There you go, Bronzy. Make sure that I sure as hell wasn't doing anything wrong. Okay, let's do one more here. Let's do this one from Brandon. It's kind of the theme of it is playing to the map. And I did like it because he has some Brood War references in here. So he says, hey, guys, first off, thank you for all coming to Columbus and doing your thing. It was the sickest land I've ever been to. My question is this. Why don't we see more builds catered to a map's features? And how can a player analyze a map to take advantage of that map on a specific matchup? Now, think about that question while he then goes into a little bit more detail. He says, to clarify my point, in StarCraft II, almost every Terran is going to open up FE into a three tank with stim timing push versus Zerg. Of course, keep in mind, this is his opinion on it. And usually transition to medevacs on virtually every map. Of course, the same standards existed in Brood War, where he says 99% of TVZs, you saw the exact same push with four tanks, one vessel, and a handful of medic marine transitioning to two-port vessel. But a lot of the best plays in Brood Wars were specific to the map. For example, on HBR, Terran could take advantage of a hard-to-hold fourth gas for Zerg by delaying his first timing by opening up mines and getting really early vessels, so his first push came out very strong with three vessels while not having to worry about a four-gas Zerg.
TVZ in Brood War changed so much. There was like Valconic, there was mech builds, there was like IF Marine builds.
I mean, you played Terran, so is this, I mean, do you understand what this guy is asking?
Yeah, he's just wrong. I mean, it's not fast expand into three racks into medevacs every single TVZ. In StarCraft 2, there's a lot of variation. And some map specific builds, like everyone would open up Cliff Abuse on the old Lost Temple. Everyone would do the quick backdoor push on Shakuris when there was a backdoor rocks. I mean, when there are futures to be abused, people abuse it. When there aren't, then they play the more standard build. And like you said, there were standards in StarCraft 1, too. But on those specific situations, then people would take advantage of it. It's the same in both situations.
So
he's just looking for patterns where there aren't any.
Okay, so, you know, we get a lot of questions like this, guys, and this is a great example. This guy may lose to this a lot or see it a lot, so he's going to come out and he's saying, everyone does this because that's what he sees from his perspective. But let's pull it back a little bit. Sorry, Brandon. Idris said you're wrong. But the question still, I think, remains valid. And if we just take all that out and say, why do you think, or is it the maps not being there yet, or is it just the way that the game is played that we're not seeing more builds catered to specific map features? I guess one example of this would be is how many cliff drops did we see on the original Lost Temple before Shattered came? That seems to me to be like one of those strategies that obviously caters to the map. So your thoughts on that? Let's talk about that.
I think there is a good amount of that. It's just whenever there is a feature, it'll be taken advantage of. Like on the version of Tal Darim Altar where it has a little low ground next to the main, lots of people go quick medevacs with a siege tank and drop in there and use it. And on any map with a short rush distance, you'll have a lot of really quick aggressive pushes that are more common. So really, I just disagree that we don't have that in the game completely.
Yeah, there's definitely all kinds of abusive stuff that people use on specific maps, for sure. Okay. Anything you can take advantage of, you will. And if it's like terrain-based advantage, you'll take... If it's distance, I mean, whatever. People abuse it.
All right,
It changes the playstyles away from like what you would consider the norm or the standard. Oh, you got your mega big water too.
I think that's solid. So, I mean, I guess we do kind of see it, just like you're saying. And I'm not sure, Brandon, if that goes any further in what you were thinking, but there you have it. So, all right, we'll do one more question real quickly. Because I do like this. I like this question. It's been talked about before. People like have dreams about it where they, you know, maybe it happens to them in one game and they pull it off and they're just like, oh my god, I'm Gosu. And that's splitting workers versus Hellions. And, you know, quite frankly, one of my favorite things is watching Hellions roast drones, even though I hate when it's happening to me. But, we've all heard the philosophy of, box your workers, stop them, and then using F1 spam to split them around your base, right? To try to minimize the threat that the Hellions bring. And I guess I want to know if they feel pros practice splitting enough, how they like to split, if you even have any philosophy on it. I'll start with Idra, and then we'll go on to Pain User on this one.
I don't think the F1 thing is as fast as just selecting your drones and manually selecting them with your mouse and moving them all around. That's pretty much what I do. I select them and spread them out. Although more often than not, I end up trying to catch the Hellions with my drones because I don't realize how fast Hellions actually are. So I probably shouldn't do that. But no, generally just selecting the drones and spreading them out with your mouse.
All right. And, Pain User, if you're rolling in with a bunch of Hellions and Blue Flame.
Oh, I've got to deal with Blue Flame Hellions, too. TBT. It's brutal.
Well, then what do you do?
I totally agree with Greg. It's quicker just to select and split them. And then not only that, the SCVs that are in the immediate firing line of the Hellions are way higher priority than stopping all your SCVs and then randomly selecting ones to send out in different directions. Like, you gotta prioritize the mining units that are closest to the Hellions and get them the hell out of there, or split up, or, you know, whatever. If you need to use them to try and box the Hellions in for a little bit so you can get a few extra shots off and kill them. I mean, there's like three different ways to take care of it, but in general, just selecting and splitting is
it's like, the point is that you should probably tell Adam that he should not be practicing this because it's probably not, it's probably not going to be a practical application in a high level game. I don't think I've ever seen a pro do it.
Yeah, it's just not the best way to go about it. The big thing Taylor said is you have to. There's higher priority workers. The ones that are in the cluster right in front of the Hellions, those are the ones you need to spread out immediately. And F1 doesn't allow you to do that. Plus, I don't think it's as fast on any level.
I agree.
I agree. I'll agree with you on that. Thought it was just one of those, like, someone made a YouTube video about it. Done deal. That was all we'll ever see it. And then it's it. But we got two emails on it, believe it or not. So there you go. We're going to now open up the help desk where we let you guys call in and ask questions here to our resident pros, Pain User and Idra. So we're going to go ahead and open up the phone line. You can Skype us at DJ Wheat or telephone 909-581-8519. I'll take our first call here as we open up with area code 910. Hello, welcome to Inside the Game.
Hello. Can you hear me all right?
Yeah, we can. What's up?
Yep.
Yeah, so he was wondering there, pain user, why he can't get out of bronze. There you go. All right, we'll take our next caller. We got Hoens. You know, but by the way, let me thank that troll for at least being polite to make sure that we could hear him before he, like, farted into the phone. I don't know what he did. What's up, Hoens? Welcome to Inside the Game.
I was like,
not much. How's it going, Styles? I have a question that is not... Well, it's a question as a newbie, quote-unquote newbie, to the StarCraft community.
Okay.
And, you know, like yourself, I come from the Quake community. And in the Quake community, when we discuss player skill, one of the things we talk about is, you know, I would never say, you know, Marcus, what do you think of 0-4? And you would say, well, he's fucking awesome. Like, that's not how you would answer the question. You would answer the question as, well, he has really good aim, really good timing, but his awareness is not really that great. And part of the problem that I have in the StarCraft 2 community is it seems that a lot of the time, you know, you'll ask Greg or you'll ask Pain User, well, who do you think is going to win MLG? Or, you know, who do you think of Kiwi Cocky or whatever? And Pain User will say, he's really fucking good. Or Idra will say, he's really good. Or, well, no, sorry, Idra would never say he's really good. Idra would say he's fucking terrible and he's just awful, right? And so my question is, why is it in the StarCraft community that a lot of the time the skills of the players are ignored? And really, it's just an overall statement of he's good or he's bad, or am uh-huh. I, or as an alternative, am I misconstruing how the StarCraft community generally talks about players?
No, you're not. I think amongst each other, a lot of top players discuss all the different skill levels. Players, there's players who I consider really good at macro, really good at micro, great situational awareness. Strategically brilliant players who don't have the best execution in the world. I mean, there's definitely skill sets like that you can apply to all the top players. I think in public, a lot of the questions, especially on, you know, web shows and stuff like that, just for the sake of simplicity, I think they just ask the blanket question, like, what do you think of this player? Or are you afraid of this player? Or things of that nature.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. A lot of times it is phrased as, how do you feel about yourself against him? In which case you're not really going to break it down as much. And then even when you are asked to just evaluate another player, most of the time you can't go into all of those different aspects that he just mentioned. So you'll just say he's good, or you'll say he's good strategically, sucks mechanically, good mechanically, sucks strategically, just on that level, because you don't have time to really go in depth about it. It would take too long.
Right, I mean, I appreciate what you're saying, we don't have time, but I just think that that's slightly a cop-out to some degree, because a lot of the times, you know, DJ Wheat gave Pain User a lot of time to talk about players last week before MLG who he thought was going to do well, and a lot of time, you know, as opposed to even trying to take that time where you even begin to say, well, he's at least say he's good at macro or he's good at micro or his decision-making is really good or his strategies, his builds that he comes up with are really unique and innovative. It's just a lot of yes, no. And I think
I actually think that comes out more than, you know, like maybe it didn't come out of like Pain User's mouth, but like let's consider MLG. You know, let's also consider the fact that what you were talking about and the explanation of 0-4 was like after 5 solid years of casting this one player to the point where I got intimate with this player.
Fair point.
Right?
I mean,
let's keep going with that, because I think Major comes out of MLG and comes out of the EG Masters Cup, and suddenly you're like, you know, if you're like, hey, what do you think of Major? And I'm like, well, I've seen him completely hit a brick wall before and fall on his face, but I'll tell you what, when that dude's on fire and he starts getting his drops going and he starts playing a really late game macro game, he's gonna fuck some shit up. You know, like, that only came from the experience of casting and watching his games, you know? So,
that's not a large sample. And I mean, even that kind of detail, I think, is more beneficial to the community than just saying, well, he fucking sucks, right? Because when you say somebody sucks or somebody's good,
no, it's not.
It gives the noobs
we'll
a lot of
obnoxious douchebags arguing about it. So,
well, I mean, I understand from your perspective where you wouldn't want to say that, but I seriously think that it aids a lot in the flaming in the community where it's like, oh, well, did you hear? Idris said he fucking sucks, so why do we even bother talking about this guy? He's obviously bad.
Well,
whereas, you know, there's obviously more to the discussion than that.
Yeah.
I mean, I agree with you, and I think this just goes back to my point before. Like, a lot of the pro players discuss that stuff amongst each other. We'll say that stuff amongst each other when we have the time and when we're in private. But if you put things out there like that, the StarCraft community is very good at, like, dissecting it and breaking it apart and, you know, commenting and harping on every little thing you say. It's just much easier for the sake of, I guess, for time and for hosts to just ask you the simple question.
Yeah, no, I'm trying to say that I appreciate the point that you're trying to make where pro players don't really want to have to defend their position of, well, he's good at micro versus bad at macro versus all this, and it's not worth their time for the most part, but I think it would be nice if even a little bit, because in the Quake community, I think it happens a lot more where people actually do discuss various aspects of people's games in a more public forum.
I mean, I agree with you. Unfortunately, I just think that you also have to get, I mean, let's think about it, you know, not including beta, because I don't think that really counts. The game has not been out for a year.
That's true. No, but I mean, you can still say more. I'm not saying you can go into as much depth as you can for games that have been out for a long time, or even Brood War or something like that. But you can say more than he's good or he's bad. I just think that that's not much. That there's no discussion there going on. There's no, you're not saying
fair,
anything.
Fair
really.
Enough. Fair enough. I mean, I would agree. And you know what, Hoens, to be a better person, I will try my best to elaborate just for you.
Mr. Styles, you don't have to do a damn thing to be a better person because you're already a damn fine person.
All right.
Let's be honest.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate that.
No problem.
All right. Go play some Quake Live.
Fuck Quake Live.
No, I agree. Go play some
CPMA.
Man. CPMA. Yeah.
CPMA.
Oh, boo. You're gone, Hoens. You're out of here. You're out of here. You can't say
Quake,
fuck CPMA
Quake
on any of my shows.
Quake
dude.
World? I don't know where he's going with
you
that.
You can't say fuck CPMA on any of my shows. It's not allowed. Ever. Let's take the next caller. 905, area code 905. Welcome to Inside the Game. What's up?
Nothing much. I'm just a diamond level player. I'm wondering. I want to ask Adra a question.
Go for it.
I'm just wondering I'm a Protoss player. I'm just wondering what Adra hates to see as Protoss when he's facing Protoss.
A really, really defensive play.
What really frustrates him at the high levels? Like, what really frustrates him and makes him like, I don't know, like, what does he hate to see against Protoss?
Okay, he's going to answer here.
Sorry?
He's going to answer for you. Here you go.
Really, really defensive Protoss. You get up a third base, you just sit and make a bunch of units, really blink stalker heavy, 3 or 4 Colossus support, and then mix in Templars later on. And then once you're getting up there in upgrades near max, then you start getting aggressive. You use blink to counter the Infestors and Broodlords, and then everything else just gets rolled, or feedback the Infestors. Just turtle PVC, really defensive.
All right. What about Archons? Have you been getting any troubles with Archons lately? Any, like, new Archon builds or any shit like that?
Archon Immortal HT is a really good composition. I don't think it's as good as what I was talking about before, but no, I haven't seen it as much yet.
All right, true. Yeah, because, like, I'm doing really good against Terran, but Zerg is really giving me a friggin' hard time right now. As Protoss, so, like, I'm just wondering what really ticks Zerg off and, like, how I can up my game, because I really want to get into Masters, but, yeah.
Yeah, really defensive, yeah. And Blink Stalker heavy is the best, I think.
All right, 905, thanks for your call.
Right.
Appreciate it. Take care.
Yeah,
thanks. Let's do another caller here. God, my screen is blowing up, guys. We got area code 864. They hung up. They couldn't handle it. They're like, oh shit. We'll try this one right here. We've got, Claim on the line. Hello. Welcome to Inside the Game. What's up?
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay. Yeah. I've got a more general question about esports.
Okay.
I wanted to know, especially from you and from the other guys, as more money gets poured into esports and more people have jobs in esports and have to represent sponsors, do you think that esports in itself is kind of changing, that it's getting more like politically correct and so on and so forth, because like I'm a little bit maybe, let's say, worried that it gets to the point where it's like football in Europe, well, because I come from Germany, where basically the players and the people who are actually involved in doing like tournaments and organization can't actually talk about it. Because nowadays, players can just go on Team Liquid and write about that this tournament is doing this and this and this wrong. And do you think that will kind of change as more sponsor interest is increasing?
In some aspects, yeah. You won't see stuff that is actually offensive to a lot of people. Like, bring back the whole language discussion with Destiny and all that. You won't see a lot of those words they were talking about in the mainstream if you have a mainstream sponsor. They just will not accept that, because that would drive away people and they'd get complaints about it. But that's not going to stop people from going on Team Liquid and posting about problems. That already doesn't happen too much, just because, you know, players don't want to piss off the people running the tournaments that give them money. But the sponsors aren't going to get in the way of that. But yeah, it'll definitely move towards political correctness as sponsors become more involved and it becomes more mainstream.
I just want to kind of throw one thing out here, because I hear a lot of people, I'm worried about this because I've seen this example happen in this game or this sport, etc. One of the beauties of the way that esports has grown is it has 100% grown from the community. Now, there have always been organizations that have been sort of the driving forces behind esports really exploding. But keep in mind, you can't have an MLG every weekend. You've got to have shit in between, right? And so because of that, the community has been able to sort of, you know, we don't have a tradition to go by. Where the tradition in those leagues, kind of like what you're talking about, is that's just how it's done. So it is kind of acceptable that it is a more open community. It is a more liberal community, if you want to even go that far. And
he's right, though.
I think what?
At the end of the day, as more money gets poured in and as more corporate interest comes, like, everything is going to, it's going to change. It's not going to be the same. Organizations are going to be way more professional.
It's not,
be
but
way
the
more
organizations can always be professional. When I go to MLG, I don't say fuck. I don't say shit. I don't, but you know what? I will always be doing this show right here, because will be a sponsor like SteelSeries and Six Pool Gaming who are like, yeah, we think this kind of stuff is good for the community.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's okay for it to be professional, like what IPL is presenting, like what MLG is presenting.
But that's different. This is more like, you know, a radio show.
Well,
you can say what you want on radio in general. I mean,
does anyone care if there's a separation there?
Well, because the MLGs and everything like that, that's more of the public face of it. So, and also, there is going to be a point where we can't have, even on the private side of things, even on a show like this, it can't be too bad. Like, what if we pick up a huge sponsor wants to sponsor us, but they say, no, you can't say those things. Then you have to decide, are you going to turn them down, or are you going to make it more politically correct? Or if one of our players, one of the people on the show, gets attached to a major sponsor that doesn't want them to behave like that in any aspect of where the public can see them, then do they have to leave the show, or do they have to turn down that sponsor, or not come on the show, or, you know?
Yeah, no, I mean, you make a valid point, but don't forget.
I think all parts of the community are going to have to move towards that, because it's too hard to keep everything separate.
You know,
only like because I personally don't care if like players are using like PC language and stuff. It's more about that players are talking about what's actually going on, because as it is right now, esports is very transparent. Like you could
really
at least it feels like it.
Because I would say that this shit is like, you know, that's one of the things that we try to advocate on Live on 3 is having more transparency, because I frankly don't think we have enough.
I love the show like Live on 3, but I'm worried that shows like Live on 3 cannot exist anymore, because like the people are paid to like not talk about tournaments or like game developers.
It's one thing. I don't know. I mean, I guess you're just talking about things that are just like kind of inherent in courtesy. You know, if IPL says we, you know, last season the results got leaked. We're going to make all the efforts so that doesn't happen again. So zip your lip. It's like, okay, you know, I'm obviously not going to go on live on three and be like, since it's no fluff, here's who won the game. I'm just, you know, so that's okay. But I'm actually okay with a little bit more transparency. So
yeah. Okay, and can I ask a second question?
Just real quickly, yeah, real quickly.
Do you use, when you box mutas, do you use stop or hold position, Idra?
Stop, usually. Hold position if there's like other things at the edge that could pull them away and I don't want to move.
Okay. Then I just want to say,
Idra, so
I'm
your
biggest fan, and thank you
stop?
For signing my shirt.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. All right, Claim, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Greg just stone-faced.
What? Well, what did he...
Oh, he was thanking Greg for signing his shirt. He said he's his biggest fan.
I might have talked
to him. Yeah, I was listening to Wheat's question. Sorry about that.
I'm sorry.
See, I just totally
found
Wheat out.
Well, I was more interested in finding out if I'm using the wrong thing because I'm pretty sure that I use hold position over Thor's and shit or you know.
Hold works. Hold has the added benefit that the units at the edge won't wander off and attack different targets if there's other stuff drawing their attention. But stop.
Oh, I see. So if there is one Marine over on the side and you've hold position, then if you're on stop, then at least one Muta will go take care of that Marine.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. If you have the Thor and there's absolutely nothing else around it, then you want stop to make sure all the Mutas actually attack it. Because if you stop and if you hold position and they're a little bit off, then maybe one of the Mutas is more than three boxes away, it won't hit it. But if there's other stuff around, then you want to use hold position. Otherwise, the mutas will just wander off. And a couple of mutas on their own, they're just going to die. They don't do enough damage to kill anything.
Right. Okay. So situation. And yet, you better believe, people, that I take notes. Shit, man. God. Why wouldn't I? Don't be stupid. I have all this information at my disposal. So that's why you should send emails and stuff and call in. Let's take our next caller here. We've got Glenn on the line. Glenn, welcome to Inside the Game. What's up? Glenn. Okay, thanks, Glenn. He couldn't handle the pressure. So we'll take this one. We got Alex calling. Alex, welcome to Inside the Game.
Hi. Can you hear me?
We can.
Yes, sir.
Oh, that's perfect. Hi. My question is my question is that if you're like coming online, you're motivated and you're happy. Oh yeah, I'm gonna kick some serious butt, and then you get cheesed. And you think, okay, next game, and you get cheesed again, and cheesed again, and you get angry on yourself that you keep losing to that garbage. How are you dealing with that, and how do you keep yourself motivated to keep training?
Will you tell us just what league you're in?
Diamond.
Okay. And you get cheesed all the time?
Oh, yeah, especially ZVZ. Like, garbage, mass struggling shit, or six pull spine shit. I can deal with it, but sometimes I just am too stupid to react properly to it.
I can feel you there, brother.
Yeah. It's just like your brain is on vacation.
Guys, any thoughts on this? I'd question whether or not you even deal with this much.
You just can't take the ladder that seriously because it's always going to be like that on any server, any level. It's the most efficient way to ladder is to cheese and try and get for fast wins.
Yeah.
That is true.
But you don't really improve by doing that.
It's super frustrating. Whenever that happens to me, I just go on these like super tilts, losing streaks. I don't really know how to stop it. If I get cheesed like three or four games in a row, I just go on hard tilt. And then even if I play a straight up macro game after that, like I always lose.
I bet Pain uses the guy that's like, oh yeah, well I'll cheese now, and then his cheese just fails, and he's like,
oh yeah,
nope,
exactly.
I keep playing straight up, dude. You know that.
I know. I'm just playing.
Come on, you know that. I thought cheese actually like was good or beneficial to me in any way, sure I'd practice it all the time, but like I don't know. It seems so gimmicky to me. Like I always imagine the people who cheese me on ladder as like these like 15-year-old kids with like
they're
a
just
shitty
like laughing uncontrollably. Yeah. They're like spilling their chocolate milk that mom just brought them. Like, oh shit, mom, clean that up. I just beat Pain user. I cheesed his ass.
Yeah, exactly. Right?
Yes.
I don't know. And so, I guess I wonder, you know, it would be so interesting if they ever did like a psych profile on like people who play StarCraft 2 and like the players who cheese all the time. Like
that'll be the next documentary.
Wouldn't that be interesting
from 9 hour
like,
films.
If they're similar minded people and like how they think. I don't know. I think it would be really interesting to see something like that.
Dude.
Yeah,
I think it would
be. We need
fun.
One of the Team Liquid guys to do his psych thesis on that or something.
On, like, what kind of people are.
Right.
If you are a cheeser, it's going to be one of those predictive indexes where suddenly you're going to be able to find out a person's personality just based off of different actions that they perform within StarCraft 2.
I think
so
you could
awesome.
With some level of accuracy. I think it definitely reflects.
I think you're right. I think
like,
you're right.
You can just meet someone in person, like. Like the first time I met
that
Tasteless,
guy would six pool me. Yeah.
The first time I met Tasteless, I was like, "This guy is a cheeser," and I'd never played him in Brood War. But I asked people about it, and people said that he was like the cheesiest player ever. That yep. he would just get you all the time, and it's like you just know.
Oh my god, that's so funny! I never actually put that together, but
right.
Well, we'll have to look into that one a little bit. We'll have to do some inside-the-game research. So, Alex, thanks for your call, man.
Yeah, I have one more question, if it's okay.
Real quickly.
Sneaking in there.
Yeah. Phone calls with the telephone, do you only accept them from America and Canada or worldwide?
I don't know. Like, if you can call it, then you can reach the show, man.
Okay, cool, because I was wondering. Okay, thank you for accepting my call. It's an honor to talk to you. Thank you.
Thank you, Alex. See, that was a great caller right there.
Yeah, that guy's awesome.
Thank you, Alex. I wish everyone could be that awesome.
He's almost as cool as the guy that was like, la, 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 or whatever. I don't even know what he was doing.
Oh, God. All right, we've got Rudy on the line. Rudy, welcome. Rudy hung up. Rudy's. What are all these, like, people freaking out? They can't handle it.
Probably like people from my work calling in.
We're gonna take Jesse's call. Jesse, welcome to Inside the Game. What's up?
Hi. Am I on here?
You're on. Welcome.
You are indeed.
All right. Hi.
What's up?
I had a question. Okay. I had a question. Kind of, I guess, for Idra, but then everyone in general. But I find it hard to control space on the map when I'm playing or hold a position. So is that sort of how can you do that effectively?
What race are you?
It's harder with Zerg because you don't really have the siege shooter. It's like the Colossus and the tank. So positional control isn't...
With Zerg... sorry to interrupt, but with Zerg, I would say it's almost more about like giving up position. And-